This is the beautiful game
described by two ugly gentlemen.
Glory to Columbus!
Who are probably sitting at a soccer bar near you.
McBride's in the box. A hard cross. McBride scores! It's 3-0 United States!
Welcome to Bone and Beam United.
Happy Soccer Podcast Day. What is up? I am Bone.
And I am Beam.
Happy Independence Day weekend. If you're listening to this, I presume it is Independence Day weekend, at least in the U.S. Maybe you live in another country where you're like, no, it's not. But in this country, it is. So happy Independence Day to most of you. All of you? I don't know who's listening.
99.8%. We do have a big following in Georgia, though.
Georgia. Yeah. Not the state.
Not the state.
Yes. The Euros country.
That almost beat Spain. We're at least leading Spain for a little bit.
They were leading Spain. That was a nice thing. We will talk some Euros today. Of course, we will talk U.S.
Let's
soccer.
Let's just talk all Euros. There's nothing else going on.
Yeah, I think we have to talk about whatever's going on with the United States soccer team. Feels like we might have to get into that. And also a little crew talk I'm sure we can squeeze in too. Full disclosure, we are recording this on the Wednesday before July 4th. So that'd be, by my math, July 3rd.
Yes.
I guess that's more my calendar, not my math. Mm-hmm. But so the crew have a game July 3rd. We will not know the result as we're recording this, so you will probably by the time you hear this. We are sorry in advance for not knowing what happened.
I think they're gonna win.
But yeah, I do too. Feeling good about that. Let's hope so.
If they lose, it was a bad performance.
Yes. And then we'll all
be
frustrated.
And they needed to win that game at home.
Well, all be, yes, they desperately need to win games, especially when you lose to the teams that are ahead of you. But they have, you know, the last couple of weeks, they didn't put up a bunch of goals and
kicking ass.
Go on the road. That's great. Love to see that. So we'll talk a little crew because it might circle back to some discussion about this U.S. men's national team. Former crew coach Greg Berhalter is, of course, you know, hearing it from everywhere after the U.S. got grouped, which I love that that's the term that we've all decided collectively. I don't know when that happened. That we just all were like, don't get grouped. Can't get grouped. We got grouped.
It seems like a new term. I don't recall, it's been around either, but
I don't recall hearing it like even in the last World Cup cycle, let alone, but yes, but we don't want to get grouped and we got grouped. So that's bad. Maybe we would have heard it had we made the World Cup in 2018. You know, we did make the World Cup in 2022 and we did not get grouped. So that's a positive.
Got knocked out.
I want people to see. I wish we had cameras in here because what's happening with Beam is jarring for me because Beam has taken his glasses off and is rubbing his eyes.
Yeah.
Because I think you're stressed out by this discussion and I totally understand why.
I'm not stressed out by the discussion. It's just, it's not gotten better. There's so many layers to this that I don't even know where to begin my thoughts. Well, that's what's stressing me out. It's like, it's just, do you start with a game against Panama knowing exactly what you needed to do against Uruguay? Do you get into the refereeing, which was awful? Do you get into Greg holding up a 1-1 sign after Bolivia tied Panama in the game and like immediately after they give up the goal to Uruguay? Do you get into performance against top 30 teams in the world? Like, I don't know where we begin this story at.
Well, I'll tell you, this is how, because I'm with you. It is hard to know exactly where to begin with all of this. And I usually find in my own life when I'm trying to figure out where to start with a tough discussion or thought process, I have to back away and get a 30,000 foot view of the issue, right? Like, if you were dealing with, I don't know, some issues with the house or whatever, you know,
maybe ceiling collapses.
Yeah. Someone may have had that recently. It's like, all right, big picture though. Like, do we want to move? No. Okay. Well, then we have to fix this. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, how much is that going to cost?
Is everyone safe?
You have to start.
Safe to live in this house?
Yeah. You have to start with the biggest picture stuff and then you whittle it down to like, all right, we know what we want now. Objectively, where do we go from there? So here's how I look at this whole situation. And that is, to me, this entire discourse, which if you look on Twitter and you search Greg Berhalter, you are immediately suggested the following word, which is out. Greg Berhalter out. We've known that for years. The big picture is, for me, this is not about Greg Berhalter anymore. It just flat out isn't. That's, everyone is talking about Greg Berhalter. It's not about Greg Berhalter. You can, I am personally of the opinion, I think you are too, not the right guy for this job any longer, whether he was when he got it, whether he was after the World Cup, whether he was at, you know, various points throughout this discourse, various people have taken positions all throughout this timeline. We are here now where I think even Alexi Lalas and even the defenders of defenders, the, oh, you snowflakes need to calm down about everything. Everyone is now kind of on the point where they're saying, yeah, it's not good enough. It doesn't look great. That is where my big picture comes in, because it's not about Greg Berhalter, like I said. It's about U.S. soccer.
Yeah.
It is about the people who make decisions at the top of U.S. soccer. Cindy Parlow-Cohn, I believe, is her name, who runs U.S. soccer now. Okay. But there are a few other, you know, executives in that same, you know, upper echelon. They all have to decide, basically, at this point, do we want to just go status quo, play it safe, fingers crossed that something different will happen.
That's not even playing it safe.
Well, it's definition of insanity is what it is, right? It's like, I just don't want to change anything, because I just want to keep doing the same old things and hoping that eventually these players will kick it into gear. To my mind, the players, the message has gotten stagnant. But again, that's fine. Greg Berhalter can, you can think he's the greatest coach in the world and it just didn't work out with this group. You can think he's vastly underqualified for this job and should never have gotten in the first place. We can all arrive at the same spot now, which is the message isn't getting through. The players, for the most part, seem to feel pretty comfortable with themselves, feel like they're doing a pretty good job.
Which also goes back to them as well.
Of course it does. Yes,
like
it
they
does.
Have to lay on that shield too.
They do. They absolutely do. But then what happens when players aren't getting the job done, when players aren't finding ways to break through,
managers
when the message
suffer.
Isn't getting, yes, the managers have to come up with better ways to get through to them. And that has not happened. So I feel like now is an appropriate time for U.S. soccer to, and they put out some statements saying we're going to do a thorough, you know, look at everything and, you know, evaluate our
That's
options.
That's what you do when you don't know what you're going to do.
Well, I'll give them this. They don't deserve it. I'll give them a slight benefit of the doubt that maybe they're just looking at it saying we are trying to do this in a way that saves some face for Greg. And then we do the right thing in like a week, but we do it and we get this done even before Copa America's over. We've already made the decision. We're moving on. And then after the Euros and all this is over in the next month, you can go out and hire someone possibly who can do a better job than Greg, possibly a former national team manager who may be out of a job, maybe one who's currently employed, who they just, you think, hey, we can pay him more. Maybe he'll come over here.
Yeah.
Either way, the idea is that you have to act quickly and decisively to show U.S. soccer fans that you give a damn about making 2026 what we all hoped it would be. I don't think anyone in their right mind believes that the U.S. is going to go out there and win the World Cup in 2026.
Come on.
No, it's that's yeah, not
what
that's
are we,
a
what are we talking
that's a
about?
Pipe dream of pipe dreams, right? That wouldn't Disney would say, sorry, that's unrealistic.
Yeah.
And we have
Did you watch the two games last week?
We've built a world of fantasy, and even us, our Imagineers, cannot imagineer themselves in that situation. But what we could have is a U.S. soccer team that makes America proud in this spotlight tournament that we're going to finally get again. We want something better than what we had in 94 when it was just happy to be here, plucky guys trying to make the best of it. And then they ended up kind of shocking some people, doing some things and getting better results than we thought. I don't want that. I want to run like 2002. I want a team that you feel like, yes, they may not win the World Cup, but they have the ability to play with anyone in the world and to win these games.
And they're going to be on you for 90 minutes.
Yeah. They're gonna make you worried that you may actually lose. And do you think at all, watching that Uruguay game, do you think they felt like we could lose this game?
Uruguay?
Yeah. Do you think they felt any worries? I'm saying, regardless of what you thought about the referees, regardless of which, of course, the referees were god awful. It's some of the worst refereeing I've ever seen. CONMEBOL, CONCACAF, etc. Whoever's in charge of all this. Like, I'm still not sure who is in charge of
all
this.
It was the same situation. I was watching the Brazil-Colombia game because I've been really enjoying Copa. I mean, I've been watching the Euros in the morning and then the late afternoon, and then
it's
at 9
great.
O'clock, I'm turning on Copa games.
Like, it's that's fantastic.
That's what I'm doing with my days. And there was even a decision in the Brazil-Colombia match. last night, which called the Colombian player offside. They drew the line, but the line wasn't to the player who scored the goal. Like, well, the player who scored the goal was onside. You called Colombia offside for a goal, but it wasn't the right guy that you drew the line off of. And so, like, yeah, it's the whole refereeing of this entire tournament has been a disaster, which is probably a bigger story at hand. But for us in this federation, it's not great. This is not Greg's fault. Have you seen the movie Good Will Hunting?
Yeah.
You know, Robin Williams and Matt Damon are in there, and he's like, "It's not your fault, Will." It's like, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. It's not your fault. It's really not. I mean, what's Greg Berhalter supposed to do, right? I mean, he gets appointed head coach of the national team. It goes out, good record against Mexico, your most bitter rivals in probably their worst era in a long time. You can beat them. You get out of the group stage of the last World Cup. You get knocked out by the Netherlands. There was a splitting point that was obviously the drama that happened in the story. Big scandal, you know, like, there was a natural point for the federation to say, we've had enough, we've seen enough, we don't need to do it. It's not Greg Berhalter's fault that he then re-engaged and took the job again.
Well, I agree with you 100% that's what would you expect someone to do who just got, you know, again, a horrible accusation thrown at him right after this World Cup? And horrible is not, I don't want to say that like it was made up. It wasn't made up. Mm-hmm. It was a real thing that happened. Greg Berhalter really did a horrible thing. And it's been 30 years in the past. The family that brought it up is a family that's been very close to him. But after all that happens, and then he acknowledges it and talks about it and all that stuff, at the end of the day, the Federation came back to him and were like, we think you could still be the right guy for this job. What's he supposed to say? No?
Yeah. No, I'm good.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand totally.
I don't blame him for re-engaging. I don't blame him for saying,
well, then if you want me, I definitely want to prove everybody wrong.
Yeah.
But he hasn't. He's proved no one wrong. And that
he's proved the vocal minority, majority, whatever you want to call it. He proved him right.
He's proved all the people who doubted him absolutely correct. And maybe they weren't right in the moment. Like, there were people when he took the job who said, wrong guy. Nope. Sorry. This is a guy who was managing a second division team in
Sweden
or Norway, wherever it was, somewhere in Scandinavia. And then after that, took a team to MLS Cup final, lost, but at least got the crew there. And then otherwise couldn't win a trophy in MLS. Mm-hmm. And they are saying that's not good enough to be the guy who's going to take us to the heights of what we hope to be World Cup glory. That's not a good enough resume. Fair or not, that criticism now seems like it might have been correct. But either way, does it make sense for anyone who previously thought, no, Greg does? I was one of those people that thought Greg's going to prove these people wrong. Yeah. Well, he hasn't. And now to your point, it's not his fault that the U.S. Soccer Federation said, let's bring him back. It's their fault. So now they need to correct that mistake. As much as I'd like to see Greg Berhalter walk up to that podium tomorrow or some other day, and July 4th, he's going to walk up and be like, hey, guys.
It would be a great news dump.
Enjoy your barbecue.
I mean, it would be a perfectly timed news dump.
Oh, well, I'm telling you, there's a good chance we put this podcast out on a Wednesday, and then by the time it hits, it's like Wednesday evening at 5 p.m., they're like, Greg Berhalter is out. He's mutually agreed.
Actually, that would be the least shocking thing, because we have a tendency to do that.
Yeah,
I know. And it's like, as soon as we get done recording the podcast, something happens.
It may be happening now. We may be recording it, and by the time you hear this, it's already done.
Yep.
But I am just saying, I don't think it makes you a hater of Greg Berhalter's to say this has reached its natural endpoint. You have 2 years till the World Cup. You need to build this to something that is actually going to get done. And when I say get done, you have to build this to something that's actually, we can be proud of it and say, this team has fire. I mean,
and I think that was my biggest problem throughout this entire Copa, is that they don't. They don't. There were so many players, and now this is on the players and having to get up and be proud of, you know, wearing the American jersey and going out there and representing your country. Like, you're playing against some of the best teams in the world. Like, this is a pretty premier international event that you're in.
Right.
You know, only comes around once every few years. It's a unique situation in which they're bringing it to the States. And every game that I watch, Bone, I mean, it would get so chippy, and you could tell that these guys are obviously, like, very proud of representing their nation. And, like, they'll stab you if they feel like, I'm going to get one over on you. Like, I literally trample the dead, hurdle the weak to, like, get to get through anything at all costs. I'm going to do whatever I can for my team. And maybe that was the most frustrating part for me, is that I didn't see that throughout 90 minutes. I mean, guys jogging, walking around, like, that's fine. Points in the game, I understand. It's tired. It's 100 degrees in Kansas City. But I'm just like, man, there was no energy. There was no pop. Uruguay was through.
Yes.
They could have sat their guys and been through to the round of 16. Like, they could have been good. Dude. Like, their goal differential was, what, plus 7? But they came out, and they looked like, okay, we know we're the better team, and also we want to, like, kick your ass up and down this field.
Absolutely right.
And we don't have it.
I was talking about this with the Evil Bald Colin the other day yesterday after this result, about how did at any point, like, the Uruguay players just all look like they were staring down a team that they knew they had to do nothing against.
Yeah.
This game did not matter to them at all.
You guys got to bring the game to us.
Yeah, well, they knew as well, we've won the group. You can't mathematically do anything about that. All we can do is add to our goal differential, mm-hmm. which, again, doesn't matter after this round, as far as I understand it, right? Okay, so that's all pretty much nothing you need out of this game. And what they then said was, yeah, we're good. We're going to go out there, and we're going to play just like we were playing Brazil. We're going to go out there and play. We're going to play hard. When we get fouled, we're going to make a meal out of it. We're going to get the ref on our side early in this game. We are going to make sure this ref, who did not, was out of his...
He was terrible.
You want to talk about out of your depth, unqualified. This is a guy who should never work at this level.
No.
For five... He needs 5 years away.
The yellow card on Tyler Adams was a crime.
Unbelievable.
The
right?
continuation of play...
Well...
That was also a crime.
Let's talk about that real quick, because he definitely screwed that up. But here's where I think we're all kind of, because he did the play on gesture, right?
But he's brandishing the card at the time. Like, well, he's got the yellow card in his hand when he turns around and see the ball's played.
It wasn't even play on. It was the advantage. Like, I'm playing advantage here. And that hand gesture, you can't, what actually happened was Uruguay got fouled. Their player smartly stopped the ball with his hand and then immediately kicked it. So you can't put play on as if I'm letting the run of play occur. The guy took his hand and put it on a ball. You blew a whistle and said there was a foul. So then all of that means the play stopped. Now, if you want to say, I let a quick restart go, that's fine. But you're brandishing a card. As soon as that card comes out,
play stop.
You cannot. Well, the play can be restarted, but not. If you bring the card out, then you can't do that. He could have blown the whistle. They could have stopped.
Bring it back.
They could have stopped it and quick restarted. And if he leaves the card in his pocket, he can then keep following the play.
Yep.
And then once it's over, he could run up to whoever he wants to and hand them or put the card in their face, say, this was for back there. That's what I let
but
them go.
He wasn't doing that.
He did nothing. He did all of it at once and still made it a confusing gesture. Yeah. The VAR obviously got it wrong on the offside on the goal, the first goal.
The lines weren't straight.
The first goal was the only goal, right? They lost 1-0. Yeah. But yeah,
the lines were not parallel to the 18 and the 6.
Right. I mean,
they weren't even in a straight line.
The camera angle that they had to start this game.
Brings us to another problem.
I mean, it's just like this whole tournament.
In 2 years, it's like you're going to have games. Well, I would hope that FIFA.
Well, you saw
all of their billions
what happened
of dollars.
During the game, right? I mean, like halfway, I don't know, probably halfway through the first half, they suddenly switched to the where the NFL cameras are. Where
like
Stu
way
Holden
up
was
on the
like,
sky deck.
Well, no. Stu Holden was like, there's cameras right next to us. Then there's cameras 6 stories above us.
Yeah.
That's the view you're seeing, is this thing way up there. We have no idea why they're using that. There are cameras right next to us they could be using. And then they eventually switched to that. Mm-hmm. And it was like, yes, please give us that view. That is more what we're accustomed to. Even though I know some people like to see the tactics, I'd like to know which player it was that was making the brilliant run. And I know you can see that after replay, but it's kind of hard if you're not... you know, exactly sure of whose number you're even looking at.
Yeah.
It's not like you were, I mean, I like that angle for a replay to be able to see the massive, but I'm used to seeing it a little bit more up close, and maybe that's on me as a U.S. soccer fan, but
no,
either way, the whole game was weird, right? But the end of this is where I said, got to go back to big picture. You are talking about a team that knew the stakes, knew it was there, and the fire was not under them for this game. Uruguay looked like the team that wanted it more.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a big
they look like they were the team that knew that they needed to go out and win.
Yeah. This analogy has been used in politics, and I'm not going to go into politics on this, but I will make this analogy because I think it's spot on. And that is the U.S. basically in this game were looking at it like they were looking at a rule book and saying, hey, dogs are not allowed to play basketball. Meanwhile, Air Bud is dunking on them. You know, like that's the analogy that's been made in politics between two sides. And that's essentially what was happening in this game is like, they're not allowed to do that. This is unfair. This referee is bad. And it's like, meanwhile, Uruguay's like, well, this is what's happening. You better stop
it. Catch up.
And again, you can't stop the refs from being bad. What you can do is not take your foot off the gas when you find out from your head coach that it might be what he was saying. We're not sure if that's what it was. But at the point in time when the Bolivia-Panama score was 1-1.
It looks bad.
Greg is sitting there yelling at guys and going 1-1, 1-1. And people, of course, naturally think that's him saying
the camera shot in the crowd score. Was before. And like everybody's losing their mind because they're looking at their phone. And then immediately
Greg is
great
going
job
1-1.
By the director who like zoomed in on him. And you see him just 1-1.
1-1.
Jeez.
By the way, if you've never seen Pete Holmes, the comedian, just add some humor to this. Pete Holmes has a great bit about if you have a friend named Juan and you root for a team that has not won in a while, when they finally break their losing streak, you would say, Juan, we won 1-1. And it's just a whole bunch of that. Anyway, and then he also does beers for his friend Piers. And please, Piers, get some beers, you know, and all that. Anyway, the U.S. not being able to realize that in that situation where it is 1-1, Bolivia is not a reliable actor. You cannot look at Bolivia and say, they might save us. Why are you looking to anyone to save you? You're the U.S. national team.
Also, Uruguay is not going to save you because they're trying to get a goal the entire time.
Have you? Their head coach, right, is Marcelo Bielsa.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of known, even though he wasn't in this game, he got, you know, he wasn't allowed in this game, suspended. He is known for his desire to never take his foot off the gas.
Yeah.
His team plays like that. You should have known this, and you should not have been afraid of that situation. You should have been very aware that this guy was coming for you, and Uruguay was not going to back down and let you have an easy one and just get out of there 0-0.
No.
You had to go get a goal. And not only and I know they were trying, but they could not break down Uruguay in the final third. And then they gave up, a set-piece goal that probably was offside. But fact of the matter is, that happens. That's why you can't rely on 0-0.
Yeah.
And so when you have your coach out there looking like he's saying, guys, they're tied. Great. So what you're basically telling your team is, don't give up a goal. Not go get a goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, you're saying, don't be stupid. Don't give up a goal. Well, they did right after, number one. So that
right
didn't even
after.
Work.
Right after.
But also, why would you want them? Wouldn't you want to tell them, guys, they're up 3-1. You better get going.
Get your ass
like,
in
that's
gear.
What I would lie to them, if anything. I would say, guys, we're down 3 right now. We got to go and get the goal differentials in jeopardy. You got to go win this game.
20 minutes left in this game.
Yeah. I would lie to my players and be like, actually, I'm just kidding. They lost. Like, we were good. We didn't even need this game.
They got beat by Bolivia,
yeah,
actually.
Right. Sure. I would love for that to be the result. The calculations from Greg have not been good. But again, it's not about Greg. U.S. soccer now has all the evidence they need to act.
Yeah.
You have enough time to do this,
mm-hmm.
and you have candidates. Did you see the furor that was caused, the excitement that was caused by the people?
You guys are crazy. You guys are psychotic for this.
Did anybody, hey.
You're
no.
Don't.
No one asked.
You're a psychopath.
A Liverpool reporter for The Athletic
stop it.
Was answering questions. And someone, and presumably an England fan, said, can we fire Gareth Southgate and get Jurgen Klopp to manage England? And he said, ha ha, he's not going to do that. The only national team job he would ever consider is Germany. And then he said, or perhaps the U.S. So you're telling me there's a chance. Lloyd Christmas, let's go.
You know how when, sorry neighbor Eric for this, you know when Chris Holtmann was fired or any time that a Buckeye basketball coach leaves, it's like, we're going to go get Brad Stevens or we're going to go get, like that guy is the general manager of the Boston Celtics right. or we're going to go and get, name your like great NBA.
Well, Phil Jackson may come and coach.
Yeah,
when you get him out
Jay
of retirement.
Wright,
or, yeah, right.
Multiple
whatever.
Two- or three-time national championship coach at Villanova. Like when that happens, it's always like these big names. That's how you're acting.
I know. It's not going to happen. But,
you know, if it does.
No, no, it's not going to happen. I get it. But here's what.
He's taking over Germany, man. Or he. What I've also been hearing, and by hearing, I mean I have no sourcing on this, but a friend of mine who is a staunch Liverpool supporter is that he's also maybe in talks of taking over the entire Red Bull organization. Like how Bez has taken over that Black Knight.
Right.
That he would be in talks of taking over like that, the full oversight of the Red Bull team.
Pretty. And guess what? That check. Pretty good.
Pretty good. Yeah.
And then he can do that for a few years until, you know, if a German job comes open, if any other job comes open that he wants, he can go take it.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, let's play fantasy land for a hot second. There would be no better coach than you.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, what are we talking about?
He would be absolutely everything you need, right? He's a guy that instantly commands respect and doesn't have to do any fake.
Across the world.
No, I mean, like he walks in and every player is not. What I find interesting, and this is just another little dynamic thing that bothers me about this U.S. national team, is Weston McKennie and these other quotes that get thrown out there from these players saying, you know, he asked me questions about my life and he talks to me about my, you know, wife or my girlfriend or my this or my that. And it's like, that's all good. That's humanizing. That's nice. But I could see if Jurgen Klopp's like that puts the onus on. I hope this coach comes in and respects who I am as a person and as a player. That's what matters to me most with this relationship. If Jurgen Klopp comes in, Christian Pulisic is going to say, damn, I hope he likes me. I hope I don't screw up this relationship with him. He's going to be going, what do I need to do, coach, to get you to want me to be on the field?
Yeah.
He's not going to be saying, well, Jurgen Klopp's got to prove he knows something for me to listen to him. No, the dynamic goes from you have to earn my trust to what can I do, coach, to make you think better of me?
Mm-hmm.
And that is a little weird thing in sports that in any other part of life, it's almost like borderline. That's a bad situation.
Yeah.
Like if you go to work every day and you're like, oh, I hope the boss likes me. Like you might be in the wrong place to work.
Yeah.
But when it comes to sports,
yeah,
you need to occasionally have, especially when you have a bunch of guys who are under 30, under 25, bunch of dudes who like have made a lot of money, have learned how to do their job pretty well, but they haven't really gotten over that hump to be elite. You now need a coach who can come in and say, you're there. You're there. This doesn't work. I don't mean someone who screams. I don't mean someone who throws chairs.
New eyeballs on everything.
I mean someone who comes in and instantly the credibility goes from the players to the coach. Right now, the players have more credibility than Greg Berhalter.
Sure.
Gio Reyna, for years, what was this whole dynamic with him and Berhalter was how dare he not put Gio Reyna out there? If the same situation happened in the next World Cup, if a Jurgen Klopp type was in that seat, and Gio Reyna doesn't play, everyone would say, well, that's because Gio Reyna's an idiot. Like, that's, no one would say,
right,
what's Klopp thinking?
Yeah.
If Florin Balogun
isn't. I guess he's not the best guy for the job.
Right. If Tim Weah isn't starting, it'd be like, well, Tim Weah, that's what he deserves. He's not getting the job done. Klopp knows what he's doing. Do you ever feel that way with Greg Berhalter?
No.
And that's what I'm saying. We have to get past that. They have to find a manager who has the chops to come in, and it doesn't have to be Jurgen Klopp. It doesn't have to be. Carlo Ancelotti's at the Yellowstone set, you know, he's been touring America.
Dutton family ranch.
Yeah, he's having a good time. He's not taking this job, but you know what? Someone who's got that type of cachet or some of that cachet would be better than what you have now, which is essentially the players can, they're hoping that the coach finds a new way to make them feel special. You need a coach who makes them feel special because of who he is, and they say, oh my God, I got to impress this guy.
And it wouldn't happen in a million years. I would love to be a fly on the wall or inside of Jesse Marsh's brain.
Oh, well.
I would just love to be inside his mind.
He was on Fox Soccer doing an interview last night.
Was he?
Yeah.
Oh,
because,
what was he saying?
Well,
he's worked
with them or with CBS Galazzo.
Yeah,
CBS,
he's
that's
CBS, yeah.
Yeah. But he was on one of those. I didn't catch a lot of what it was just all about, like, it was a typical boilerplate. Hey, we're just focused on what we've got to do. And Canada, if you've missed it, mm-hmm, did not get grouped.
No.
Canada hired him right before this tournament and moved on.
Yep.
You can argue about the easiness of their group. You can argue about whatever else you want
to. It's Panama and Bolivia.
Right. You had two teams to get past. One of them's a CONCACAF team that you should beat, but you can't seem to, for whatever reason, get the results you need. And the other one is a team that hasn't won, apparently, a game that's at sea level in 40 years.
Canada had Chile and Peru and Argentina.
Oh, is that an easy group to get out of? But they did. They didn't make excuses about how one of their players punched someone in the head, and they didn't make excuses about how the ref was against them and how VAR sucks. They got the job done. And all I'm saying with Jesse Marsh is, I bet you, I guarantee you, when he took that job with Canada, they probably put in the contract, before you sign this, we need to know that you're not leaving for the U.S.
Yeah.
He probably had to sign something that says, and if you do, it's going to cost you $10 million.
I don't even think that
ridiculous
he would,
amount.
Like now, that bridge
oh,
is
that's done,
way burned.
Right? But Jesse Marsh is sitting there with a team out of this group stage. Yeah. It looks horrible for the U.S. Soccer Federation.
And I'm not even saying that Jesse Marsh should have been the guy, but all I'm saying is that I would love to know what he actually thinks about this.
Oh, I bet he'll tell you. There will be a book. Jesse Marsh is going to write the book of all books when this is all over. I guarantee you. He strikes me at least as a guy.
Canada wins the 2026 World Cup in American soil.
No, on Canadian soil. They're playing games
in
Canada.
I know, but the final would be on American soil.
In
but
Dallas,
yes.
Texas, I believe, right? Isn't that where we're doing it?
East Rutherford, New Jersey.
Right. You're right. That's right. Copa's final, I think, is in Dallas. Yeah. Anyway, it's right. It's all there that you had an American manager that a lot of people thought would have been perfect for this job.
Well, if he would have been perfect, but it would have been a new voice at least.
Well, what I'm saying is he was available at the time Berhalter was there and you were deciding what to do. He had time. He could have been the guy. This is a guy who had Champions League experience. This is a guy who had Premier League experience.
Bundesliga.
This is far bigger resume than Greg Berhalter and was a U.S. soccer player and has played in MLS. All the things that everybody liked about Greg Berhalter, he had as a player and as a coach. So, but more so as a coach. Yeah. That opportunity was there and they missed it. You know who else they were in talks with years ago before Berhalter the first time? Marcelo Bielsa, Uruguay's head coach. Mm-hmm. And you know one of the reasons they passed on him, supposedly?
Because he couldn't speak English?
Yeah. That's why Tata Martino's not an option for this job. Or that's why
Zinedine
Bielsa
Zidane's
was passed.
Not an option for this job.
I'm just saying, man, at some point, all these players are... Half your players are playing on Italy team on teams in Italy, right? I mean, you will learn. Everyone will figure out how to communicate with the guy. And you know what? Worst case scenario, a translator comes in. And also, who's to say that if you're paying a guy $3, $4 million to coach your team, he doesn't take a few Duolingos on his, you know, off time and says, hey, pass the ball. You know, like that's, he can learn is all I'm saying. The players can learn, too. They can learn a little Espanol. They know how to speak it.
Yeah.
Half of them probably speak two or three languages now anyway because they have to because they're playing all over the world. I don't understand why we're limiting ourselves. So U.S. soccer, one, has to get rid of Greg Berhalter.
Yeah.
Two, has to then go hire the right guy. And I don't care if that guy ever put on a U.S. soccer jersey.
I don't care.
I don't care if he's ever lived in the United States of America. It does not matter to me. What matters is you find the right coach for this group to get them playing to their capabilities, which I don't think they've reached. I do not buy, I don't know if you do, this argument that they are just bad and this is all you can hope for.
They're not bad.
No, you have, I'm saying.
Which is why we're having this conversation. If they were bad, it would just be you and us being like, well, they got grouped and Copa.
Right.
Well, let's talk about the crew for a half hour.
Yeah, right. People like, Weston McKennie's been getting a lot of heat because if you look at him.
Did you see Clint Dempsey? Did you stick around for the postgame?
I did.
So, I'm not a big fan of Alexi Lawless.
I don't think you are. Really?
I thought he did a really good job on the post game.
With Alexi, it was the meme of the worst person you know actually makes a good
it
point.
Is.
It's exactly that's what it was.
It
but
is.
But even he had to acknowledge that where we are now.
Correct. And I mean, I'm watching the desk, and Clint just looks like he had seen a ghost. He's like, I just don't know. I don't know what to do, where we go. You need somebody with fire, and they just don't have it. Like, he was pretty disheveled after the game. Like, honestly, speechless. The guy's hosting a desk show for Big Fox National, like, right after the game. I think they'd be, like, chomping at the bit to say some things, and Clint Dempsey's like, I don't have any words for what I've seen.
Right. Well, and I thought it was interesting, too, because you had in Rob Stone sitting on the desk, who is the
anchor.
I'm not here to give opinions necessarily. Though Rob Stone, by the way, has covered soccer in the U.S. for 30 years.
I like Rob Stone. I think Rob Stone does a great job.
Rob's one of my favorite broadcasters.
He's very good.
So he, when they came back to him, because everybody was kind of pulling punches or looked like they were maybe trying to figure out exactly what to say. And Rob Stone had this great point he made, which he said, this is something to the effect of like, this damn game or this damn team had gave us no hope. And then he said, I spent more time watching Bolivia and Panama because I spent more time watching Bolivia and Panama because I knew this damn team wasn't going to get it done tonight.
Yeah.
And then that kind of
research on Panama for the next game.
And then you could see him kind of catch himself like, so anyway, Alexi,
I shouldn't have said that.
How do you feel?
But I did.
But it was raw and it was honest. And it was a moment where I think that's exactly what U.S. soccer fans have been feeling is, why would we look to this team to do the job? We have to look to the other teams. And you know what? It comes from your coach. Your coach was looking to the other teams, yeah. It appears, and saying, here's what they're doing. Just FYI, guys, don't get too upset out there. Just try to stay within yourself and play your game. No, I want these players to feel like they had to – I want them to feel like they had to leave it all out there. Mm-hmm. Did you see the Austria game?
Of course,
in the Euros.
Of course,
right.
I did.
Great game.
Which
right?
one? The Netherlands one or Turkey?
No, the Turkey.
Because both of them were
both of
great.
Them were amazing, right? But the Turkey-Austria game.
The goalie at the end. Jesus.
So Turkey wins that game, yeah. Right? Or Turkey A, I guess is how we're saying it now, yeah. Which rightfully so. Say it how they want. But that is, they win 2-1 in that game. And mm-hmm. It was down to the wire. It was, you know, Austria's pouring everything on to try to tie that game up. The end of that game, the Turkey players collapsed like they had lost.
Yeah.
And I mean, when I'm watching this, we were doing the radio show, but I look up and I see those guys are like almost passed out on the field. And obviously they were relieved, but I thought at first when I just saw that, I'm like, did I miss something? Did they just tie it up and now they're all defeated? And I look up, no, they won. They didn't jump up and run around. They passed out almost on the field of exhaustion because they gave it all for 90 plus minutes. Mm-hmm. And that's what you get. And I look at that and go, I did not see that effort from this U.S. team. If they had won that game somehow, it would have been because a deflection, something lucky, not because they were the hardest working team out there. And that's where this team needs to get back to is, you know what, we may not have the most skill, but we will make you run. We will make you work.
That's
we will
the
make
most
you
frustrating
be physical.
Part is that they do have a good amount of skill.
I know they do, but now it's like they're trying to show everybody we can win that way, and I don't need you to. I need you to win.
Yeah.
I don't care how you win.
Yeah.
Just win. And instead, it's like we're trying to do it in a certain – we don't want to be the old America that won. Yeah, I'd like to have the most skill. I'd like to do all that, but I want results, you know? I would rather just see
I don't
see
need to see,
the
like, the way that Brazil play. I don't
– If you could.
Well,
if you had a Vinny.
Yeah, obviously. Like, if
you had half their
if
bench.
If you can do that and win, like, yeah, that's great. But
yeah.
They're trying to do something It just doesn't even make sense either with, like, the tactics that are employed in a Greg Berhalter system, why you would be trying to do that.
Yeah, it makes no sense to me.
And you would think, too, that with all the players going to bat for Greg Berhalter and that they like them, that you would have some pride in yourself saying, well, if we lose this game, we might lose our coach and let our guy down.
Yes. You would like, think.
And there was none of that. There was none of that.
It's yeah. I saw who had the comment. Someone, maybe Weston McKinney, someone it was attributed to. I didn't hear these comments. It was just on Twitter, right? That one of the players said we would run through a brick wall for Greg Berhalter. It's like, well,
I know Tim Ream said that.
Maybe that's what it was, Tim Ream. It's like, well, great, show us. I'd love to see it. That's another issue, by the way. Tim Ream is 36. Like, he's not going to factor in 2 years.
Yeah.
He's not going to be he should not be a starting part of your back line. Maybe he's brought on as a veteran, you know, kind of leadership guy. But the reality is, that's an outlier that you cannot count on. You cannot count on him being healthy. Yeah. And in 2 years, you're going to need a better defender in the middle of your defense. And right now, that guy's not playing. You know, I hope that eventually we get there. But the big-time minutes are not there for that guy.
I just find it so interesting, too. Like, John Brooks had his thing, spat with Greg Berhalter. And it's like, well, you're not even on the radar now. you know, it's just...
Right.
It boils down perfectly to what this federation is about.
Yeah, man, it is a lot of, we have to get to a point where it's like the best players get out there, and I know they do in most cases, but like Gio Reyna needs to be told, you need to play. And I don't care that you don't like your situation where you are. I don't care that the managers learn how to get in the manager's good graces wherever you are and get on the field.
Yeah.
Because if you don't do that, you can't develop into the player as much talent as I think he has. Right now, he's effectively like a slightly better version of Justin Merrim to me. Like he's that like, yeah, we know he can cut in and make some plays every now and then. But is he a guy that's going to, like, win you a tournament?
No.
No, not at this level.
I don't know if we have one of those guys.
No, the only one who even possibly looked like it coming out of this tournament maybe is Pulisic, just because he had the, you know, the Bolivia game where he scores a goal and gets an assist. But I can't say that I know for a fact that game's going to – that game didn't show up against Uruguay.
No.
It's not right now going to show up, it doesn't look like, against the best teams in the world. It's going to show up against the 50-something ranked team in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to –
which they're good against. They should beat them.
Yes. But, man, like we talked about last week, hey, the Berhalter fans who were like, what are you going to say now? It's like, I'm going to say they beat Bolivia like they should.
This conversation literally last week.
That's what I'm saying. We were talking about this and said, let's see what these next two results are. And what have they been?
Bad.
Loss and loss.
I guess they made it clear, like your point was last
week. This is exactly right. At least we know. And if it's not clear to U.S. soccer, that's where we're at now.
Oh, God.
No, I'm saying that's why now it's on U.S. soccer. Anything beyond this, we can yell about Greg Berhalter as much as we want. This is a U.S. soccer problem until they fix it.
Yeah,
so.
Totally.
At this point, it's not Berhalter out. It's U.S. soccer. Do something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, make it happen. We'll take a break. Come back. I don't know.
I'm exhausted.
I am too. We'll do something for like 10 more minutes, and we'll probably have to pass out. So you're listening to Bone and Beam United.
It defies description. Now back to Bone and Beam United.
As always, you can tweet the program at Bone Beam United. So looking ahead, Copa America, I know most of us probably are not going to keep watching. I know our guy Nate Beckman will.
I'll watch.
Nate will watch. He's a Colombia fan. Well, yeah, of course. I know it's on. But by the way, if all results had held and the U.S. had advanced, they would be getting their rematch with Colombia because that's who Panama is playing. Colombia and Panama play on Saturday at 6 p.m. The game Thursday on July 4th at 9 p.m. if you'd like to watch, Argentina and Ecuador.
These are all knockout games. We're in knockout rounds.
Yeah, we're in knockout round now. Yep. So it's one-offs to the rest of the way. Whereas there's only eight teams left because, of course, Copa is smaller than, you know, all these other tournaments. But Argentina-Ecuador is on July 4th at 9 p.m. Then Friday, July 5th at 9 p.m., Venezuela and Canada, which, again, we'll see what Jesse Marsh can do there. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very winnable game for Canada. I'm not saying
tough game. Should be a good game.
Yes, but it's not the worst draw you could get if you're Canada. Colombia-Panama is going to be, I think, a tough one for Panama. I think Colombia, especially with their fans being so vocal and just taking over these stadiums, like that is going to be a tough one. And then, of course, Uruguay and Brazil should be a banger of a game.
Oh,
also,
my God.
So those last two are both on Saturday. 6 p.m. and 9 p.m. So you got some back-to-back goodness right there.
The Uruguay-Brazil game will be awesome.
Yeah. It should be one hell of a matchup.
It will be hated for 90 minutes, too.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Those two countries, no love lost there, I'm quite sure. And then, of course, the semifinals will be on Tuesday night and Wednesday night, both games, one game each on each of those nights, both at 8 p.m. And then you'll have the final Sunday, July 14th. So that will be a fun one. That's Copa America.
You got a hot take for me on who's going to win Copa?
You know what? At this point, I'm rooting for Brazil. Although, like, I don't know. There's probably some contingent of U.S. fans that are like, no, I hope Uruguay gets it done so that we can say, look, we were in that game with them.
So they were, when we were doing our, like, World Cup previews and everything, they were a pick for like a dark horse candidate to like make the final four.
Sure.
So I've liked the way that they play and like
their roster's
like really good.
Yes, they are. I'm with you on
how
that.
How we're above them in the world rankings, I have no idea. But that game should be a banger. I think whoever gets through that game meets Argentina in the final. I would also love to see Canada beat Venezuela take on Argentina again in that rematch of that first round game that they played, because they played already in Atlanta. So if they rematch again, I think Canada, it's tough, obviously, yeah, going up against Argentina, but I think it'll be, I think it's going to be Argentina and then Uruguay, Brazil. The winner of that will be.
Yeah, I tend to think you're right. And I, but that's exactly.
God, Argentina, man. First of all, they're unbelievably skilled. They're big, they're strong, and they are some nasty Fs.
Dude, that's
like, they are just so nasty. And I remember watching them in the World Cup a couple of years ago, and I'm like, boy, I hate these guys. These guys are jerks. Like, if that was your team.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
It would just, you wouldn't be able to get enough of them.
I mean,
Martinez, I hate that guy.
Dude.
Watching him, he is a jerk. But I find
Villa
myself.
Villa fans know that well.
But I find myself now, like.
He's your jerk.
They've now endeared me with their shithousery.
Dude, but that's it, man. And that is exactly, by the way, that's what Uruguay was doing, too.
Yeah.
It was shithouse central from the jump. On that one, was it not?
Yeah.
They said, we know what this game is. We don't care. We will go to ground every single time we get touched. We will make a meal out of it. We are going to do everything
we can.
These
refs are bad.
And by the way, the U.S. showed you in the previous game that if you do any of that, Panama. Right, yeah. When that happened, what did the U.S. do?
Got
a guy red carded 20 minutes in, punching you in the head.
Yeah.
So obviously, that's the right strategy against certain teams. Now, of course, if two teams are doing it to each other, then it's who's going to break first and really do the egregious thing, mm-hmm. right? And I'm not saying that's the prettiest form of soccer. But again, if it was a beauty pageant or a figure skating competition, then I would care about style points. I want to win. And Argentina has found a way. Yes, they have tremendous skill. They have Lionel Messi,
yeah.
right? They have a lot of guys who also looked up to Lionel Messi who are trying to be better than him. And maybe one of them will someday. I doubt it, but you never know. But they've got a team full of skilled guys who can play. And they've got guys who say, not only are we skilled, but we can mix it up with anyone.
We can tussle.
Yeah. And I agree with you. Uruguay's like that. Brazil, I wonder if they've
Brazil's
got enough
walking,
of that.
They're teetering.
They could get to it, but I feel like they're not. That's
not them.
No. It feels like they have to try to do that sometimes.
Yeah.
And Uruguay feels like, nah, we're comfortable. We
like it.
Have you
down
met
in the
national
mud.
Hero Luis Suarez? Yeah. Like this is we have
statues built.
This is years
Where do
of
you
us
start
being
with
like
the
this.
Biting or the handball in the World Cup against was it Ghana?
I feel like
we
that's
did
right.
that against the World
I feel
Cup.
Like that's right.
Yeah, where you handball. Okay, cool. You're gonna miss the penalty. Great. I don't care if I get a red card.
Yeah. Oh man, that's gonna be some. I'm enjoying those matchups. So those are all this weekend. Also this weekend, starting up on Friday, we get back to the Euros because all the are
way different than Copa.
Oh my gosh. It's
the
like
juxtaposition
watching
in the two styles of play.
It's like watching
great.
Two different sports, is it,
it
not?
Is. It
it's
is.
Like why it is like watching yeah, it's like watching monster trucks versus an F1 race. Yeah. Like it's just two. It's like they
one
technically
is a chess match. The other one is just you know that new thing, like that slap fight.
Yeah,
like that like slap knockout thing.
Well, it's like they're both vehicles. They both are like have engines in them, and they're similar in that way, where they all have four wheels and engines. But like one of them is trying to crush cars, and the other one is trying to like go around a track
fencing
quickly.
Against slap fight.
Yeah, like, it's like there's two people going against each other, but that's about the extent of it. So Friday you have a couple. So I mean, you got soccer all day. You got Spain, yeah. Germany at noon. That should be an epic matchup.
Friday, if there was a day ever to
knock off.
By the way, long weekend for most people too, because it's Independence Day.
Yeah.
What a Friday that you have, because you mentioned it. It's Spain and Germany at noon, and then it's Portugal, France at 3. So that's as good as you could doctor up.
How about, by the way, Cristiano Ronaldo? Jeez. Missing that penalty and then acting like
someone told him
his family had just been murdered. It's like, dude, you missed a penalty. I get it. You know this is like kind of the end of the road for you, but you've missed him before. Like, we didn't get an act like you've been there from Cristiano Ronaldo, no. But we probably should.
But that's how he acts all the time.
I
give a lot of credit to Slovenia, defended their ass off for,
they
you
did.
Know, 120 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, how about Portugal's goalie, too?
My gosh, yes. Oh, dude, well, that's the only reason they advanced, right?
Yeah.
Was those three stops.
Diogo Costa, 1-2-3, bang, bang, bang,
yeah.
All in a row.
See ya. Done. Pretty great.
France getting lucky against Belgium. Not lucky, but I mean, they had the big deflection.
No, you know what, though? The skill didn't separate itself the way I thought it would against Belgium,
mm-hmm.
but you got the lucky bounce. You put forward plenty of chances.
Yeah.
I don't think France in any way, shape, or form got an unjust result there.
No.
You know, it'd be for Belgium, I feel like they can rightfully say we held our own with them and played
well. Not a very
well.
Good game. Like, I thought that was going to be a really
it was
good
not,
game.
But it was not enjoyable sucked. To watch. Yeah. I agree with you on that. And then, I mean, outside of that, like Austria, Turkey was great, like we said.
Terrific.
But
Netherlands
then,
just destroying Romania. They're going to be dangerous.
Germany didn't seem to have a ton of issues with Denmark. Spain, after, Georgia got up on them and then
and
Spain
it was 4-1.
Said,
to one.
Never mind.
England, how do you feel about your England pick?
Not great.
That was...
not great.
Boy, was that dramatic.
That was right down... That was close. But you know what? Survive in advance.
As soon as... So we're watching that game. I mean, I watched all of the game. And watching it, Slovakia take the lead. I'm like, okay. We'll see what Gareth Southgate ends up doing here. I'm sure they'll be a little bit more positive. They're England. They're going to kick into gear. And they just didn't.
No.
They just... I mean, up until 4 minutes left to go on the clock, I mean, they're still passing it around the back. I'm like, if you guys want to win, like, you got to go. Like, you got to go right now. And if Jude Bellingham just carrying them out of the depths of hell with an unbelievable bicycle kick, and then to his credit, as soon as he scored that, I'm like, England's going to win.
Yes.
Like, they're going to win the game. What was it 5 minutes into extra time, Harry Kane puts in a goal.
Yeah.
2-1. They were defending like hell at the very end, though.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're doing, but it's not very good. But they're through to the quarterfinals.
Well,
like you said, you just have to win.
Gareth Southgate is the typification of how can I make this, like, we have to win a certain way, as opposed to just, hey, we got all these great players. I should probably figure out a way to make them all just, like, enjoy themselves. And
I'll tell you
what do they
want
to do. Like, he is in the spot that, like, Berhalter was, where he's trying to get all these guys to be on his side. Because he doesn't have the cachet to go in and tell them what to do.
Yeah.
But at some point, you do have to get them to, like, click into gear and all play. It's a tough balance for him. And I'm not saying, by the way, that excuses the poor performance. A lot of managers would love to have that challenge. He's been given that, but he's also been given one of the best rosters in the world.
Yeah.
So make it work.
Maybe the best roster in the
world.
By the way, those Manchester City guys are lost without Pep. Like, it's not even close to what they are.
No.
You see it, all these guys like scattered around. Like Kevin De Bruyne is not the same without Pep.
There is something to be said too for the who's the best player on England's team right now?
Jude Bellingham.
And where does he play?
Real Madrid.
Not in England.
Yeah.
This discussion has been getting floated around of like, you look at some of these teams in the Euros who have been surprisingly good, like Turkey.
Or Switzerland.
They don't have a ton of guys playing in England.
Yeah.
They got a ton of guys playing in Italy. They got a ton of guys playing in other leagues. Not playing in Germany. Not playing in England. And again, the Premier League itself is
great
epic.
Entertainment.
And yes, but also I feel like there's just so many people who have gravitated to it in our world of soccer because it's easier to find the coverage.
It is.
I can go read every Guardian article and not have to hit Google Translate.
And the coverage is great.
Right.
Awesome coverage.
And there's great coverage of Germany and Spain and some of these other leagues, but most people don't have the same history with, you know, Hoffenheim, say, as they do with even a small, like Nottingham Forest, you know, like that's just a team more people are going to be aware of, I think, in the U.S. than some of the good German teams. But that doesn't mean those leagues are necessarily any better or worse than England. It means those leagues are probably also doing some really great things, and not as many of us are tuned into it.
Correct.
So I wonder how much of our bias of England is the best league. I think that's still true, but I don't know that it's getting players to be the best versions of themselves when it comes to these tournaments.
Definitely not national team versions.
No. And by the way, where have you suddenly had a lot of guys who are U.S. players? They've been based in England for a decent amount of their careers now, and they're not progressing, I think, as well as we would have liked to see.
I actually need a lot of guys go to Italy. I mean,
a lot of our
guys.
And I hope that, and by the way, you've seen Christian Pulisic have one of his best professional, his best professional year ever he just had. And I do think he's been a much better player for the international version of him. But he's, you know, still at the end of the day against Uruguay, it didn't show up. And I hate to keep going back to that game. My bigger point is I think the English national team has a problem, which is a lot of their players are based in England.
Yeah.
And that does not seem to be the best way to develop your guys for these international tournaments because it's such a different game. When you're playing in England, I mean, there's pressure, but it's pressure to be like, don't finish worse than 13th, but you're crazy if you think you're going to be top four.
Mm-hmm.
So maintain the level. And it's like, that's not the same vibe as when it's like, I got to go out today and kick their ass. Yeah, like, there's no chance. Like, right. Not that they don't have that in certain moments. They have rivalries. They have all this different stuff. But it's, I do wonder if England prepares you the same way, maybe.
I'm going to give you the same chances I had last week. If you're to move off of England, are you going to do it or are you sticking with
it? Can I tell you, I want to so bad. I am not rooting for England at all. I want them to lose. I'm not rooting for this team.
But here's the problem.
But I feel like they're going to sneak themselves into a final. It'd and then they're so going to put one game together that actually, by the way, did they win in Germany when they won in 66? Was that in Germany?
I don't know.
I feel like it might have been.
I have no idea.
Well, what I'm saying is maybe I'm just telling you, I'm going to stick with it. I'm not going to change my pick.
They get Switzerland coming up here on Saturday.
If they play like they did against Slovakia.
And if England or Switzerland plays the way they do against Italy.
Like, yeah, that's over.
See you later. You're going to be knocked out. It would have been great entertainment if they got knocked out against Slovakia. But I love Jude Bellingham so much.
Oh, dude.
He is the right amount of arrogant because he knows he's great. And I can't get enough of it.
I'm with you.
I can't get enough of it.
And by the way, he comes through
and
for his national team.
He didn't really have a great game,
moments.
But that moment in that
he came
spot,
through.
He did.
Came through.
Yeah.
Who scored their other goal, by the way?
Harry Kane.
Where's he playing now?
A trophy-less Bayern.
Hey, playing, but he showed up for this. Showed up in the moment.
He's finally scored a goal that means something. Congratulations to him.
It's really, I'm just cherry picking examples. It's really not fair.
You and I are right
fair.
On track for a France-England.
Oh, yeah. It's still there. Netherlands-Turkey should be a banger, too.
Oh, but God, that's going to be a great game.
Ned is just, they look tough.
Yeah,
man.
They're humming.
They're good.
Memphis is playing the way that he is, like.
Unreal. He's, yeah.
And then you get, like, Mullen as well in there, Gakpo scoring their goal. It's just, they're
good.
Very tough. Yeah. They're very organized.
Spain, Germany is Friday, like we talked about.
No clue what's going
to
happen.
No, that game is. I mean, I'm going to give the edge to Germany just because they are the. I don't care what they're listed as; they're the home team.
Spain's been the best team in the tournament for me.
Yeah, they really have. Yeah. They found ways to win all different ways, mm-hmm. all different whatever you throw at them. They seem like they've got it. They've got it figured out. And then as Portugal, we talked about Portugal and France.
Another great matchup.
Yeah,
Friday's banger.
I feel like France wins that one. They're going to get to the final, even if they play. No, I'm saying like if France beats Portugal, then it's like okay, they could play. They're going to play Spain or Germany next. Yeah. I feel like they'll win that if they beat Portugal. But obviously, if they lose, they're out. I'm just saying I don't think they're losing. If they beat Portugal, then I think it's like they've clicked in.
Yeah,
they are going to have to raise their game now to another level from where they've been so far in
this
tournament.
But that's what makes them so scary. And the same to England, like.
Yes.
They haven't clicked in, and they're in the final eight.
Yes. I'm saying those two teams have a level that I think Germany and Spain have to play at this level. They can't let off. Yeah. They are just who they are. But England and France can, like, muddle through and still win these games. And if they ever get it to the final, put it into sixth gear, it's over. So, yeah, we got a fun week of soccer there. So we will know a lot more the next time we talk about all that.
Greg Berhalter is going to get fired by the time this is released. And
well, you know what? They need to find a new head coach.
Yeah.
I hope they do. I hope they don't take too long either because it ain't that hard, man. Go get someone who has shown you in the last two World Cups or Euros that they can coach players of all different backgrounds and get results. And, you know, who's our guy who coached Saudi Arabia this past time? Irv?
Yeah.
Get Irv.
Get
handsome Irv. I don't know if he speaks English, but he's got a sex appeal that crosses language barriers left and right. You will have more fans of him than you will have of the U.S. national team by the time that's all said and done. All right, that's it for us. We will talk more crew next time, I'm quite sure. Hope you guys have a great 4th of July. Safe holiday, and we will see you back here next week.